Support for Boston Public Radio comes from the Lyric Stage, presenting The Drowsy Chaperone. This bubbly love letter to musical theater includes mix-ups, mayhem, and a wedding or two. Now through May 12th at Lyric Stage Boston. Tickets at lyricstage.com.
Ahead on Boston Public Radio, it's Mueller-palooza. After 2 years of endless speculation, subpoenas, and indictments, the Cliff Notes version of his report is out. President Trump is declaring no collusion, no obstruction, complete and total exoneration. But AG William Barr's summary has some complicating words. Mueller's investigation does not conclude the president committed a crime, but it also doesn't exonerate him. So how will Trump and the Democrats use Barr's summary to their respective advantages, particularly in 2020? We'll take on this on today's Politics Roundup.
Now that we finally got our first glimpse of Robert Mueller's investigation, what are we to make of the fact that Mueller has left the obstruction of justice question unanswered? Is this an invitation to Congress to decide? Does this betray some conflict between the special counsel and the Department of Justice? Legal analyst and former Mueller colleague Michael Zeldin joins us for that. Then Congresswoman Catherine Clark tells us what the Dems' next move is. That's next on Boston Public Radio. Rowdy, I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Good morning, Jim.
I didn't think you'd make it in. Nice to see you.
Wasn't easy.
No matter how
get
divided
myself together.
The nation is, probably the one thing we've been united in is our collective anticipation of Robert Mueller's report. Now that he's submitted it to the Department of Justice and we got the summary from the Attorney General, here's the key takeaway, not in Mueller's words, but in the words of President Trump.
There was no collusion with Russia. There was no obstruction and none whatsoever. And it was a complete and total exoneration. This was an illegal takedown that failed. And hopefully somebody's going to be looking at the other side. So it's complete exoneration, no collusion, no obstruction. Thank you very much.
However, the key words in William Barr's summary of Mueller's investigation are these, quote, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it is also does not exonerate him, so much for complete and total. Joining us to talk about this and what the Democrats' next move will be and should be and what this means for 2020 is Shannon O'Brien, former state treasurer and Democratic gubernatorial nominee, and Charlie Chippio of Chippio Strategies. He also worked in the Romney administration. Charlie and Shannon, nice to see you both.
Hello.
Good to be here.
Well, let's start with you, Shannon O'Brien, the Democrat. What did you think?
What I thought is that this is not over. It obviously is something that is, I think, confusing to a lot of people because this has taken so much time that they did find that there was no active collusion, although it did result in 34 indictments and a handful of convictions at this point in time.
Nobody connected to on the Trump side of the equation.
As a result of this, you had Michael Cohen. All of this arose.
But not as relates to conspiracy collusion.
But my point is that this was not nothing. Mm. And the fact is this is not done. And the fact is I do believe that Mueller is saying to Congress that it is now in your court, that it is inconclusive.
On the obstruction
On the obstruction, issue. It is inconclusive as to obstruction, that they could not, even though there were many, many, many dots, that they could not connect them for a criminal indictment, that there was a potential for obstruction and that the Congress needs to look into that.
But on the Republican side, well, Donald Trump, as always, exaggerates, some would say lies. I mean, the language could not be clearer. This was a pretty clear victory for Donald Trump and his family, was it not?
I think it was a good day for Trump. I think they won the battle, but they certainly have not necessarily won the war. There's a lot more going on. I think it certainly does raise a real political minefield for the Democrats going forward in terms of how they proceed.
Political battle unequivocally yesterday, and this has been such a confusion. I mean, again, 34 indictments, but we can't even remember who they are. We have Russians, we have Americans, we have people who are in the administration, but the details of this, Charlie and I were just saying offline, wait a minute, we pay attention to this stuff, and it's even hard for us to keep all of these facts straight because there has been so much information and so many dots, if you will, coming out of this investigation that it's hard for people to follow. And when you have the president saying confidently, no collusion, completely exonerated. There are people out there who are parroting that statement, and they believe that that's
100%
true.
But when he said no collusion for 600 and some days, he's right. I mean, he is – that is what the – assuming that William Barr is correctly summarizing what the Mueller report says, at least on the collusion issue – he is right. Obviously, yeah. As always, he went too far. But I want to pick up on the Democratic thing. I have to say, I think the potential for the, as you said a minute ago, Charlie, for the Democrats to overplay their hand is epic. Jerry Nadler is home in his district in New York, chair of the Judiciary Committee, does a press conference about a nanosecond after the Barr report is released saying the investigations will continue. And Shannon, as somebody who was pretty successful in electoral politics, you're the perfect person to ask. So every Democrat in America has been saying, let's wait for the Mueller report. Let's wait for the Mueller report. Okay, so the Mueller report came out. The Mueller report said no collusion, and the president is pretty good at
speaking. We don't know what the Mueller report has said.
But we – yes, we – unless Bill
– No,
unless
we do not know what the – we know what the paraphrasing of the Mueller report has said by a guy who, before he was appointed to this position, said he thought that this was a witch hunt.
No, the obstruction of justice issue. So wait, let me be clear.
Okay.
I think, with all due respect, you are part of the problem. For a Democrat to be saying the day after the Barr – unless you're saying that Barr's –
I am saying we have not seen the Mueller report.
I understand that. But are you suggesting that Barr's conclusion, that Mueller concluded that there was no actionable collusion is a misrepresentation?
You keep saying collusion.
Yeah, there's
collusion
two different things.
And obstruction.
No, exactly.
Things.
No, I'm talking –
obstruction of justice is a crime.
As I've said 12 times already, on collusion,
okay,
we all agree that on obstruction, there was a deferral
by
the special counsel. We're going to talk to Michael Zeldin, his former special assistant, in a few minutes and try to get him to say what is going on with that. On collusion alone, the president is right to say that. So if the president, if we waited for Mueller, no collusion, a court, unless Barr's making it up, which I find hard to believe, at least on that front, if the Democrats immediately plunge into these investigations, even if they were the right thing to do.
So are you telling me that the Democrats should abdicate their responsibility for oversight of the president when there is clear evidence of obstruction of justice that this investigation has brought forth and that Mueller has turned over to the Justice Department to further investigate and examine?
I didn't say anything close to that. I'm going to repeat it
for the third time.
No, it's a huge issue.
We're talking about obstruction. I'm not talking about collusion.
I don't care what you're talking about. I'm talking about the issue of the Democrats being in a political position. I'm not playing lawyer. Potentially overplaying their hand, as Charlie Chippia suggested a minute ago, in the minds of the average busy member of the American public.
I don't think the average member of the American public is as stupid as this. I think there's two different things.
Excuse me, did you see the poll on witch hunt last week?
Yes.
50% of the American
and Jim,
people.
What were they talking about? They were talking about this whole thing, but we now have two breakdowns. We have collusion and we have obstruction of justice. I don't think people are that dense. I mean, even if you're not
I guess I am playing the lawyer here. And I think that it is frightening to think that there has been potential criminal behavior that has been brought out by this report and that the Democrats should walk away from
it. You're misunderstanding.
But I don't think that's what – I don't think that's the issue. Clearly, they shouldn't walk away from it. All I was saying anyway is that they have to be very careful in terms of how they proceed and not be seen as having it be very political and just overplaying their hand.
I agree. I mean, I'm talking two different things. I just said to you, on the politics, he won the day yesterday.
Yeah.
And he lied yesterday when he said he was exonerated, when even his handpicked attorney general said he was specifically not exonerated.
Right.
So Trump will take that message and lie about it to the American public. However, as we do have a legal issue here, and I think that Mueller has punted it back to the Justice Department and back to the Congress to properly
adjudicate. Well, let me try with you then. See, we all now agree that Donald Trump won the day yesterday, at least politically won the day.
Mm-hmm.
But to follow up on what you said, Troy, which is what I was trying to do with Shannon, but I think I misspoke, is the Democrats have great potential to lose the next day, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Not as a lawyer, not as as somebody who should follow where the Constitution takes them, but politically overkill, I guess, is what I'm saying. Marjorie thinks the American people are too stupid for
that. May I ask you a quick question here? If Mueller himself says he, quote, does not conclude that the president committed a crime but does not exonerate him. I would argue that the Democrats look ridiculous if they don't follow up on
You're
that.
You're both missing. I think they have an obligation to follow up. I'm saying when they follow up.
They're just as, it's just as sharky waters now as it was with impeachment before. They have to be very careful
and they should
going
not be,
forward.
And
I think they're tougher waters now is what I'm saying.
Oh, they are tougher waters because he got up yesterday and he lied to the American public once again about the fact that he was exonerated. And there will be people there who will hang on that and believe it to be truthful. So you're absolutely right. There will be 40 to closing in on 50% of the people in this country who will hang their hat on that the lie that he said yesterday. And it was a lie to say that he was exonerated because the specific writing within what Barr said yesterday specifically was not exonerated. And the president said the opposite.
See, I think the American people need somebody like me who took 6 years to get through law school instead of a normal three to explain it to them. But you know, look, they need
and
to
I
be...
think we can all calm down. This is one day after we have a summary from a guy who's got a political bias, and I think it will play out, and then we move on from there. But Jim, I think you're getting worked into a frenzy here.
No, I think everybody, you both, except for Charlie, are misunderstanding my point. My point has nothing to do with the law, nothing to do with the Constitution. It has to do with what everything has
but
to do with
you were
politics.
Asking, but are you asking whether or not the Democrats should proceed or not? That's
no, that, if you listen to my question, it was specifically said to you as someone who's won your elections, you know politics as a political matter. How the Democrats handle this is a hugely important issue.
I already acknowledge that the politics is very difficult because you have a significant number of people in this country who will believe what Donald Trump said yesterday.
Well, and
so the politics does become...
But you, so you think, why don't you tell Shannon that she thinks the people are too stupid to understand
also
like you said to me.
I think that there are a considerable number of people in the country who are not wild about Donald Trump, who will see it as not... what the president said, because the president has a long history of lying about everything.
What
so
I am saying is
base,
the thing has to play out.
His
That's
base
the whole point.
Will be with him. Yeah. I'm not
so
sure.
So basically, we're in the same place today as we were a couple of days ago because everybody reinforces.
No,
I don't think so.
Not.
I think
we're
it's
not.
Worse.
Well, no, it helps.
This is a
big
victory for President Trump.
Oh,
absolutely.
It's a political victory.
Saying,
but I don't know that it's a permanent victory. I think it's a step along the way.
Exactly. That's exactly what I
And if I could just take a deep breath. I don't disagree with you that this is a political loss for the Democratic Party. I said that and I acknowledge that when Charlie said it. However, I think that the Democrats need to take a deep breath, that they have to follow the lead of Nancy Pelosi, who has been very clear about saying there is this is not, you know, we're not at the point where, you know, we move forward with impeachment. However, this is an investigation that has so many unanswered questions that the Democrats leading the House are going to have to answer those questions and that the Mueller report needs to be public. Now, there's some problems because there are so many, I think 13, 14 additional jurisdictions where Trump and Trump allies are being investigated. And so there may be some problem about releasing
that
information.
Well, there are also grand jury issues and executive. We're going to discuss that all with Michael Zeldin a little
bit. So that's what they're going to have to be careful about.
Okay, we're going to continue this SmackDown drag out here in Studio 3 with Shannon O'Brien and Charlie Chipiola.
I think it's the microcosm of the country, actually. It really is.
Brief break on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. What do you think we're talking about exactly? And we're doing it with Charlie Chipiola and Shannon O'Brien. Before we continue, can you read an email that just came in about something that you wrote about in the Boston Globe on Friday?
Oh, hold on.
Do you have
it there? Let me find it. Go ahead, and I'll look for it.
In any case, I'm going to try
Found
this.
It.
Oh, you got it?
Yes.
Oh,
this is from Robert. He's very clever. Yeah. The first Greater Boston. the first Greater Boston marijuana store opened like a mile from my house in Brookline on Saturday. So he just sent me an email and said, Marjorie, I drove by the marijuana store on 5 a.m. Saturday. Very strategic of you to push your recliner down the street so you'd be comfortable while waiting first in line.
I actually heard the lines were not epic like they had been.
I would say several hundred on Saturday, but they had them all organized behind the rope line.
I've driven past the one. I had a meeting in Northampton. I've driven past the one in Northampton and
huge.
At 8 o'clock at night, there were like 40 people.
Plus Northampton.
Yeah,
there you go.
They were there all day too. I went by Sunday, same thing. It was crowded, but not.
Shannon,
that
bad. I'm going to try another angle. It's the same thing. See how I do.
We're actually agreeing. We just are taking a different.
I think we are.
Yeah.
But we may not agree on this. Nancy Pelosi, who you're praising a minute ago, Marjorie and I had this debate last week too, said impeachment for now is off the table, which clearly it seemed to me created some sort of a divide in her own Democratic caucus. Obviously, some of the younger members are much more into it. It seems to me that with the obstruction of justice thing passed on to Barr, some people are asserting maybe the intention of Mueller was really to pass it on to Congress, but in a de facto way, it ends up in Congress's hands anyway, as you said before. It seems to me there's even greater potential for and a much more difficult job for Pelosi to herd these cats, as the saying goes. There is heightened likelihood of internal tension and division in the Democratic House. Is that not...
Before this came out, I think it was very difficult for her. And I applaud her for what I think is not necessarily, you know, for taking the right political judgment to make sure that the party does not look like the witch hunt party. And I think that she has been working very hard to make sure that even though there are more, you know, less senior or even more senior, but members of Congress who are flailing on this political issue. They're angry about this political issue, and I think she's been, you know, taking the right posture.
Well, don't you think? I mean, it seems to me at this point, especially after this, the Barr-Mueller report, whatever you want to call it, came out, that if Trump is going to go, he's going to go through an election, not through an impeachment.
Oh, I think that's right. I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, I still think that depending on you know, the Democrats' well-established, masochistic tendencies, depending on who they nominate, they should certainly, they I think, will stand in a good position to win that election. But I do think that's absolutely the
Although
what's play
this
out.
Probably does help the president's reelection, wouldn't you say, this collusion thing?
It helps the president and the economy, you know, the way it is right now, you know, is certainly, you know, a tailwind that is helpful to the president as well. But we're still 2 years out.
Yeah, I don't think but
I would not,
like
you know, but it's still going to be kind of hard to avoid, you know, 34 indictments. You know, we don't know how many more, you know, convictions there are going to be over the course of the next 18 months, you know, and these are in other jurisdictions. There are, I think, 13 or 14 other jurisdictions that are investigating either campaign-related corruption, you know, whether it was, you know, inflating or deflating the price of, you know, buildings and whether it was insurance fraud or bank fraud. You know, some of those indictments have not even happened yet. So we don't know what's going to happen over the course of the next 2 years. But again, I will vehemently agree with Jim. Yesterday was not, you know, Saturday was not a good too late, was not a good political day for the Democratic Party, but I do believe that they need to be very, very prudent and very restrained in how they continue to examine something I think they're legally and constitutionally bound to do.
And I think there's just going to be so many more chapters that unfold of this between now and the election that this is going to seem like a very dim
Well, there's multiple other investigations going on, as everyone knows, in the Southern District of New York. You know, may I just say something about the economy or ask you something about the economy? I'm rather stunned after we learned during the federal government shutdown about great swaths of America, whether it's 50%, 60%, 70%, depending on whose survey you believe, are one paycheck away from disaster. I always find it fascinating. People say the economy's great. For whom? Is it good if your wages are coming up some, but not that much? And anecdotally, and both in stories I've read, people are getting their tax refunds and they're,
very upset. There's no simple answer to that, but I think the closest thing I can give you is to say the people for whom it's good are the people who are in the stock market, who've been able to take advantage of this huge run-up in the stock market. And interesting, over the last 10 years since the financial crisis, the number of Americans who are invested in the stock market has actually gone down. Mm-hmm. So another thing that sort of increases
the
gulf between
Let me get in a fight with you now. Donald Trump did tell the truth the other day. When that economy poll number came out, 71% thought the economy was in good shape. It was the highest number in 19 years
the economy
of polling.
The economy is in good shape.
No, but I'm just saying it's obviously more to get to 71%. It's more than just the
47%
own stocks.
That's why I'm perplexed. I mean, it seems odd that you would feel that way, especially when you hear all these terrible things about the farmers with their difficulty in the trade deals and now the floods and all this.
When Beto O'Rourke announced his candidacy last week, I thought, you know, and he was on one of multiple tables that he jumped on last week, I thought he gave a very good speech about being on a farm and what the policies, you know, were doing to, I mean, this is a solid, you know, Trump voting bloc.
Right.
And the fact is, those are some of the people who, you know, that they probably will tell you that the economy's good, but they can tell you that their own personal financial situation is not good. And so, again, we're talking apples and oranges here because you can answer the question, is the economy good? Yeah, the economy's good. It's roaring. I see all this stuff happen, jobs, blah, blah, blah. But whether or not your personal financial situation is better, that's a very different question to answer.
Speaking of your personal situation better, we only have 2 minutes left here. The one story that got buried as a result of the Mueller report was not Gronkowski, but another Patriot.
Which is what I thought we were going to talk
about. The owner of the Patriots puts out a statement on Friday, I think it was, maybe on Saturday, I'm not sure. I am truly sorry, then proceeds. He doesn't ever say, and we talk a lot about apologies on the show, what exactly he's sorry
we
for.
We can't.
Well, because of the case. But quickly, if we can, either starting with you, because that's political too, frankly, yeah. In some ways. How did? What's your reaction to what Kraft, as in the elder, Robert Kraft, had to say?
Well, look, I mean, I think he said what he could say. He can't say what he's sorry for. He'll get himself in legal problem. I think that, you know, there have been all these articles this weekend about how he's apparently, you know, really just humiliated and brought down over this thing. And I felt like he had to come out. He felt like he had to come out and say something and unburden himself. And so he was in this odd situation where he had to say something, but he really couldn't say anything.
What was your reaction to it,
Shannon? This is a guy who's been woven into the fabric of, you know, the community, the business community, the charitable institutions, philanthropy, the Jewish community. I think that this is part of his road to what he perceives as redemption and, you know, fixing the reputation that he's fought so hard to establish for both him, his wife, and the rest of his family. I think he's limited as to what he can say and do here. But, you know.
Well, he can say and do whatever he wants.
He's got to worry about the legal case. But, yeah. you know, if you read that article, which I did, you know, the long, you know, basically
Bob Holler's
history. Bob Kraft, the article that they wrote.
This is the Kevin Draper piece in the New York Times.
Yes.
Oh, but there was Bob Holler thing that was really effusively praising.
About him growing up in Brookline and the family wasn't really rich and he almost was a rabbi. And, you know, so I think he is trying to remind people of the sort of all the good things he's done here. But this is a difficult situation because it's not just some, you know, older guy going out and getting a cheap thrill illegally. This is a guy who's been personally involved in, you know, sex, you know, slavery and combating it. And so it is so it's the cognitive dissonance of what he did and what he has fought for. I think is difficult for a lot of people to sort of reconcile.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very
See
much,
you
guys, for coming in.
Thank you.
Charlie Chipio is principal of Chipio Strategies and senior fellow at both the Governing and the Pioneer Institutes. Shannon O'Brien is a former state treasurer and Democratic nominee for governor. Charlie and Shannon,
good
thank
to see you.
You
both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, we get a legal analysis of all this, of the Mueller investigation, the summary from a guy that used to work with Robert Mueller, Michael Zeldin. He is next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Hey, Michael, I didn't know you were kidding. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Robert Mueller is clear that he found no one associated with Trump's election campaign guilty of colluding, conspiring with Russia. However, there wasn't as much clarity on whether Trump obstructed justice. On that matter, Mueller essentially punted. He didn't draw a conclusion one way or the other. So what are we to make of this, and is this uncharacteristic of him? Joining us is someone who would know, Michael Zeldin, former colleague and special assistant of Mueller's and a legal analyst for CNN, resident fellow in the Institute of Politics at Harvard's Kennedy School, and somebody Marjorie and I were texting yesterday we couldn't wait to talk to. Michael, it is great to see you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Michael, you sent such great notes. You're so clear. You can tell you're a law professor because everything is so clear. So anyway, no collusion. That's without equivocation. But neither here nor there on obstruction of justice. What's going on?
So it's an interesting thing. It seems as if there must have been a conflict between Mueller and DOJ about whether there was a viable theory of obstruction. Remember, Mueller, from the public reports, seemed to believe that public tweeting, that firing people, even though you had a constitutional right to do so, that aggressive behavior, fire Sessions, fire Mueller, all those sort of threats amounted to an obstruction of his investigation. That's not typical obstruction of justice theory. Obstruction of justice theory says usually, well, there's a crime that the individual has, you know, been charged with or is being investigated for, and he's trying to interfere with that investigation of that underlying crime. Here, Maine Justice couldn't articulate, nor could Mueller, it appear, articulate an underlying crime. So they found Mueller's theory of obstruction, this mosaic of different events, a little bit, you know, sort of on the outer edge of propriety. And in the end, Mueller said, all right, I will defer to DOJ traditional analysis of obstruction, and I won't push the envelope. And that's what it seems here. But Mueller, you know, sort of like with a parting shot, said, I will accept what you recommend, that is, no charging. But let me just tell you, I think all this evidence is not fully exonerating of the president.
Which is
unusual.
Well,
that's the key line. Let me read the sentence. You've all memorized it, I'm sure, in the last 20 hours. Special counsel states, this is Barr writing, quote, and now he's quoting special counsel, while this report does not conclude the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. I have to say, when I heard this, it was like Comey redux. And, you know, we're going to talk to Catherine Clark, Congresswoman, in a minute, Democratic Congresswoman. It seems to me the Democrats are being somewhat hypocritical. They were trashing James Comey for doing something prosecutors like you and Mueller and the Comeys of the world don't ordinarily do, which is render an opinion on something where you're not prosecuting. And now they're celebrating what Mueller did. He did cross a line that traditionally prosecutors do not cross. Is that not a fair statement, Michael?
No, I think it is a fair statement. I was asked yesterday, what did I find most interesting about the Barr recitation of the Mueller report summary? And I said that Bob Mueller would say this does not exonerate the president because that is editorializing, and that is exactly what Comey did, and that is not what I expected from Mueller.
So does that suggest to you that Mueller was unhappy with the determination that he knew Barr was going to make on this issue?
I think that's right. And it speaks to an interesting problem, which was that is that under the independent counsel statute, which doesn't exist, the independent counsel did not have to go to DOJ for essentially approval of their prosecution theories. Mm-hmm. They were free to do as they wanted to because they were independent. Well, that statute doesn't exist. And now there are these, you know, sort of makeshift special counsel regulations, which were drafted by the Justice Department, and those say that the special counsel is somewhat independent and not fully independent. And we see the problems of not being fully independent because they had to come back to DOJ and say, is this permissible? And DOJ said, you know, are you sure you want to push this envelope? Mueller, to his credit, I think, or maybe discredit, depends on your point of view, you want to take the to his credit standpoint, didn't say, I object and I demand this, even though you, DOJ, think otherwise. If he had done that, that would have triggered a notice to Congress that the independent counsel was denied something, and that would have set off, you know, impeachment hearings. Mueller decided to be an institutional player and deferred.
Yeah. You know, by the way, I'm smiling at Michael Zeldin, and he's looking at me like, "Why are you smiling at me in the middle of this thing?" And while I'm watching, you mentioned you said this on CNN. While I'm watching you on CNN, I mentioned to Marjorie yesterday. You were asked the question like we've asked you. So, do you think Mueller is going to want to testify in front of Congress? And your answer was something like, "Well, he's not really that kind of guy." And you went on to say, "When I was his special assistant, he hardly talked to me." Which we're talking to Michael Zeldin.
But you know, Michael,
it's true. It's true.
I don't want to read too much into this, but it almost seems that there was pressure brought to bear by the Attorney General, who has written quite extensively about his problems with obstruction of justice on Mueller. But maybe I'm getting carried away.
Well, it's a viable theory. We're all speculating. My expectation is that Mueller and Rosenstein, for a long time, were struggling with this obstruction of justice theory. Mueller has on his staff this guy, Michael Dreeben, a very accomplished Supreme Court lawyer who still works in the Solicitor General's office. In the Justice Department, they have the Solicitor General's office and the Office of Legal Counsel. And I think that all of these people were collectively discussing this for a period of time. I don't think this was when the report was delivered on Friday, the first time that these guys saw Mueller's theory.
Explaining the fast turnaround.
Yeah. They've been talking about this for a long time, and that they ultimately reached this compromise of some sort, which was to not charge but allow for the statement that they're not fully in agreement on the decision.
Okay. You know what I wondered is whether the fact that nothing was obstructed factored into this, because for all the presidents talking about a witch hunt and let's get rid of Jeff Sessions and I never would have appointed him, blah, 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 Mueller's investigation did go on, I think, without obstruction. Maybe the subpoena for the president is an exception to that, but he didn't succeed in obstructing justice, which is a good thing for the rule of law in the United States. But did that factor into the result?
I don't think it should have in this sense, which is to say that a failed attempt to do a crime doesn't make it not a crime. You know, like you can attempt to rob a bank and get caught, and that's still you know, a crime. So the fact that, if you will, someone may have been trying to obstruct but didn't succeed doesn't mean that you can't charge them with trying to obstruct. But it is a factor, as Barr said in the letter, is a factor that there was no underlying crime that was ultimately interfered with.
We're talking to legal analyst and former colleague of Robert Mueller, Michael Zeldin. We're going to keep talking to him after this brief break. Listen to 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
WGBHnews.org. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. If you're just tuning in, we're going over the Mueller investigation. Well, not the Mueller investigation. We're going over the summary provided by the Attorney General with Michael Zeldin, legal analyst for CNN, fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and former colleague of Mueller himself.
You know, I want to ask you, Michael Zeldin, because I think you may know this fellow, George Terwilliger.
Terwilliger.
Yeah. Terwilliger.
Okay. He was formerly Barr's deputy attorney general in Barr's first stint as attorney general.
Yeah, under George H.W. Bush, it says in the Washington Post. Yep, is that correct?
I worked for George.
Okay. So George is quoted yesterday in the Washington Post. And, of course, Mueller didn't reach a conclusion on the obstruction of justice issue, which some say strikes a discordant note with current and former law officials. And one of them is this Terwilliger fellow who pointed out that one of the primary reasons for appointing a special counsel is to get a conclusion. Quote, "I think courageous people have the courage to make decisions and those who don't punt decisions," said George Terwilliger to the Washington Post. So what do you make of that?
If George got his wish and Mueller got his wish, if Mueller wasn't, you know, sort of a stand-up institutional guy, then Mueller would have said, "I demand a subpoena for the testimony of the president so I can investigate whether or not my theory of obstruction of justice is proper." If that happened, in all likelihood, President Trump would be facing perjury charges. So, you know, be careful what you wish for. What Mueller did here was to say, "I'm not happy with this, but I am going to go along with it. I'm not going to test this, you know, sort of novel, cutting-edge theory of obstruction for the first time where the target is the president of the United States." So I would be very careful about criticizing Mueller for this.
But the other thing is, I've read that the only reason to get to the nub of obstruction of justice is to know the intent and motivation of the obstructor. So without talking to the president, and we know he did answer questions, but without talking to him, how would you know his state of mind? How would anyone know?
You learn that by circumstantial evidence. If you think about an ordinary case, you have a fellow who's under investigation for obstruction of justice. You call his lawyer and you say, "Look, I've got circumstantial evidence about this, but I really can't easily prove it. I want you to bring your client in so I can ask him, did he commit the crime that I'm investigating him for?" Most defense lawyers will say, "No, thank you."
Okay.
Or, "Yes, but we'll plead the Fifth Amendment." And so normally prosecutors don't get to ask the subjects of their inquiries, "What were you thinking when you did this?" Because that's just not kosher.
Okay.
Michael Zeldin, can I change gears for a second? Every Democrat said, starting about a nanosecond after we heard that Barr's letter, four-page letter, was on its way to Congress, we want the full report. That's the mantra. It's almost like the Democrats' response to no collusion is full report. But as a matter of reality, even if there wasn't politics floating around, grand jury testimony, legitimate executive privilege, information that is of value in pending or soon to be initiated prosecutions, all of those legitimately can and should be withheld by Barr, I would assume. And if the answer to that is yes, for at least the time being, we're not going to see anything close to a full report, even if Barr wants to be as transparent as the Democrats want him to be, right? Right?
Depending on how Mueller submitted his report. So, for example, he could have submitted a report which is a narrative that doesn't include any executive privileged materials or any grand jury materials. He could have put that all in an appendix. He could have had a classified appendix and an unclassified appendix. He could have had a report that is transmittable without regard to the things that you raise, which are all exactly correct, that those things would have to be culled from any sort of report. So we don't know what the report structure looks like. If it is one big report that includes testimony of witnesses before grand jury, copies of classified information, methods and procedures used to acquire that information, then yeah, those guys are going to have to redact this report, and that's going to take a while.
Can we get back to the topic that Marjorie spent most of the time talking about, and I have a little bit too, which is the most important issue, is what happens on the obstruction of justice thing. We talked to you a little bit about what was in Mueller's mind, but before you leave, I want to clarify a couple of things, Michael, if we can. You said to me or Marjorie earlier that obviously it's likely there was some disagreement between Mueller and Barr, or else there would have been a recommendation. As I'm thinking about, as you and Marjorie are talking, obviously if the recommendation were to exonerate the president on Mueller's part on obstruction of justice, I assume Barr would have preferred that because Barr knows that his own objectivity is questioned. So is it fair to assume that the decision by Mueller to defer to Barr was not only that they had a disagreement, but to go one layer further, that he believed that a crime had been or crimes had been committed by the president, putting aside whether or not he should be indicted while in office. Is that not a fair conclusion?
Well, I'm not sure that I'd go that far. I think what we could conclude is that's a possible conclusion for sure. I'm not disputing it, but I would think that I would say, and it's complicated a bit, I think I would say that Mueller believed that he had a viable theory of obstruction and that given that theory, he had an entitlement to subpoena the president for whatever additional information he felt he needed. That which the president wanted to take the Fifth with respect to would be his prerogative, but there may be things that weren't Fifth Amendment protected that Mueller would have liked to have obtained. And so Mueller, I think, was saying, you know, I really wanted this subpoena, but I wasn't going to push the envelope.
I see. Okay.
And you see,
and I can't make the case as thoroughly as I'd like to without doing that. So that's why he.
So I'm going to defer to traditional DOJ decision making. And, you know, if you look at this in a standard case, so let's say you're investigating some big case and it has to be decided at the very highest echelons, you refer to the AG and they make the decision. So that's sort of what happened here.
Michael Zeldin is really helpful, as always. Thank you.
Former colleague of Robert Mueller, a legal analyst for CNN and a resident fellow in the Institute of Politics at Harvard Kennedy School. Up next, Congresswoman Catherine Clark joins us.
In a few minutes on Boston Public Radio, Congresswoman Catherine Clark joins us for her take on William Barr's summary of the Mueller report after 2 years, 19 lawyers, 40 FBI agents, 2,800 subpoenas. Is it what she expected? And what will the Democrats do next? Will they pick things up where Mueller left off? Then we open the lines and ask you if you're relieved this proved not to be a witch hunt or if your fantasies of the Trump clan in orange jumpsuits, Marjorie, been dashed. Do you want the Democrats to find out if the president obstructed justice or are you done? as Mueller fatigue set in.
We take a detour from all things Mueller with the Reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price. Then Charlie Sennett gives us his take on the Mueller report, what it means for U.S.-Russia relations, and what this has in common with the current Brexit, chaos. All that is next on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio, Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Even though President Trump's interpretation of Robert Mueller's report is, quote, complete and total exoneration, Democrats are determined to pick up where the Mueller investigation left off and left out. Join us on the line to talk about this and their push to make the full Mueller report public is Congresswoman Catherine Clark. She is the vice chair of the House Democratic Caucus. The Congresswoman represents the 5th Massachusetts District. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, good to be with you.
Good to be. Thank you for calling in, too, Congresswoman. So what did you think of the Mueller report that we got?
I think it raises as many questions as it answers. And, you know, it is our responsibility in Congress and what we're going to be pursuing are those answers. And it really starts with making sure that the American people and Congress are able to see the full report and the underlying evidence so we can understand the implications that it has.
By the way, Marjorie and I both misspoke. We both call it the Mueller report. It is not the Mueller report.
It is not the Mueller report. But Barr's interpretation.
Congresswoman, I assume you would agree, since virtually every Democrat that I've seen on TV or heard on radio has been saying for months, let's wait for the Mueller report, let's wait for the Mueller report. We have great confidence in him, that the issue of collusion, which we know is not a legal term of art, but conspiracy with the Russians, is off the table. Is it not there unequivocally? The special counsel said no.
That is certainly how it appears, you know, reading the summary and reading how Attorney General Barr has cast it. And that is the crucial question. Was there Russian interference into our election? That appears to be answered with a resounding yes. And we now have to take the steps to understand it. If no American, as it appears, was in active conspiracy and coordination with Russia, that is good news for the American people. But we know that this investigation also shows that the president has surrounded himself with very corrupt people, with six, you know, indictments of close advisors. So we need to see the underlying evidence to be able to understand exactly how to interpret Mr. Mueller's obstruction of justice findings and how it plays into the many other areas that we are looking at this president and his administration.
So what are you going to do about the obstruction of justice part? I mean, that does seem to be the area that's most nebulous from Mueller saying that he's not going to pursue an obstruction of justice charge, but he's not going to exonerate the president on that charge either.
Yeah, you know, from what we know, the report says it does not conclude he committed a crime. It also does not exonerate him. This only can be answered if we see the full report and the underlying evidence. But we know that we have an untruthful, bigoted, chaotic president, and we certainly hope that we can rule out that he also was a conspirator with Russia. That seems to be ruled out, and that's good news. But we need to understand fully the evidence behind it, what is behind the decisions around the obstruction charge, and pursue it if necessary.
Yeah, we're talking to Congresswoman Catherine Clark. You know, one of the ironies I assume you Democrats in Congress appreciate is the line that you and Marjorie just referenced in Barr's four-page memo. The special counsel states that, quote, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. You all are focused on that one line. which is, to me, on the part of the prosecutor, exactly what all of the Democrats criticized when James Comey said similar things about Hillary Clinton. The notion being, well, if you're not going to prosecute people like you, James Comey, you like you, Bob Mueller, don't say anything. And the parallels, it seems to me, are striking. And in one case, the Democrats trash the speaker, and in this case, they're celebrating and highlighting his conclusion. Is that not a fair characterization?
I think that it is not a fair comparison for the reason that it is Department of Justice's clear policy that they will not indict or charge a sitting president. So we have to be able to look at the evidence, and that is only true for the president of the United States. So we have to be able to look at that underlying evidence and say what was behind that and make sure that, you know, this Attorney General Barr says in his letter that that was not taken into account, that he has made this decision separately. Mm-hmm. But it is really our responsibility in Congress to understand that evidence and understand Attorney General Barr's decision. We may agree with him in the end, but we can't know that until we see the report and the evidence. So I think that is the key and crucial difference from those prior situations.
You know, Congresswoman Clark, I think it's safe to say one of the reasons you won your election, not to Congress, but you were elevated to a very high position in the Democratic Party in the House, vice chair, as I say, of the House Democratic Caucus, in part of your political skills. And are you not worried about how the average busy person in America is going to react to Jerry Nadler, the chair of the Judiciary Committee, home in New York, holding a press conference minutes after the Barr letter was released, saying what you're saying, we're going to continue, when the average person might be saying, well, wait a second, we just went through almost 2 years of this Mueller thing. Mueller concludes no collusion, and then they hear the president say he was exonerated on obstruction, too, which, of course, is not true, but he says a lot of things that aren't true that convince the people. Are you worried that there's going to be investigatory fatigue and that people are going to say, people on the fence are going to say to the Democrats, enough already. If Mueller is not gone after the president, fix the economy or make it better, fix health care, stop with this already. Do you worry about that political fallout from this?
Well, I think that's why we continue to be focused. We ran and won the majority in the House not to do investigations, but to return the power to the agenda to the American people. So we're operating on two tracks. One is doing our job in the agenda that we set forth, you know, investing in infrastructure, reducing health care costs, passing a bill that fights corruption and dark money in politics and protects voting rights. And we are full steam ahead on that agenda. And that is how our majority is going to be judged in 2020. And we're very focused on that work and putting the American people back on the front burner in Congress. But at the same time, we have a constitutional responsibility. And we have to make sure that we are doing the work of oversight that we're required under the Constitution to do. So this report has been long anticipated, but it's a part of the puzzle. It is a piece of the investigation. And to truly understand it, we have to be able to read it and understand the evidence. And, you know, hopefully we will agree and support the conclusions that Attorney General Barr has made. But he is a political appointee, and it is our responsibility to do that. And I think the American people understand that this report needs to be made public, not just for members of Congress, but so that people can read it and understand it and, you know, have faith in its conclusions.
Congressman, you know, obviously the whole report is not going to be made public because of the restrictions on possible executive privilege stuff and also grand jury stuff. So you're not, I don't think you're going to get it, are you?
We don't know. You know, since we don't know what's in there, we haven't heard from Mr. Mueller on his opinion. We haven't seen it. It's hard to anticipate. We know that the White House is very likely to make claims of executive privilege. And, you know, it certainly seems from the Attorney General's letter that there are some claims around grand jury. We also have a clear example from the Republicans who, you know, received over 800,000 documents backing up the decision not to pursue any charges against Hillary Clinton. So, you know, the Republicans have joined us in a public statement saying this needs to be public. We had one of our rare bipartisan agreements when we passed a resolution saying make this report public. I think whatever side you land, whether you're a Trump supporter or not, I think that people are equally eager to understand and see this report so that people can trust it and we can make sure that it is public. Sunshine is going to be the best thing for moving forward from this.
By the way, it wasn't just bipartisan. It was 420 to nothing, that vote you described.
Right.
To Congress. Right, exactly.
That's right.
We're talking to Congresswoman Catherine Clark. One last thing from me, Congresswoman. Assuming you get the parts of the report that you want and that your reading is similar to the Attorney General's. We've heard nonstop in recent months, we have to wait for the Mueller report in terms of impeachment. So what would this conclusion, if it is that Barr is correct, mean for those efforts?
Well, you know, I think that the Speaker and the Democratic caucus have been very clear. Impeachment is not a goal in and of itself. It is going to be where the facts and investigations take us. And so we're going to see. But at this point, we are not moving to impeach the president. We are doing the work of returning power to the American voters, pursuing the agenda we said we would in the midterms, and upholding our constitutional responsibility of accountability and oversight. So it has never been a goal, but if the facts and investigations come forward, you know, we also have a obligation to not impeach any president for political reasons and not to avoid impeachment for political reasons. And currently, we're just not there.
Last question for me, Congresswoman, and thanks so much for your time. It's really the first question that Marjorie asked you. What's your reaction? Were you not surprised? I mean, regardless of, you know, the rhetoric of the moment is everybody's supposed to say whether they believe it or not, and I'm not ascribing this to you, but I'm talking about television last night. This is great for the country, even for people who can't stand Trump and wanted Mueller to be indicting him for, you know, everything they could possibly see. Were you not surprised that after, whatever, 600 and some days, 500 witnesses, 16 trillion documents, or whatever he said in the beginning of the summary, that no collusion and no collusion, and the special counsel does not even make a recommendation on obstruction of justice. Did that not surprise you, Congresswoman?
It didn't surprise me, but I wouldn't have been surprised if it came out the other way as well. This president's behavior towards Russia has, you know, raised a lot of questions. And I hope that he, too, is reading this report and saying, I mischaracterized what I heard. I am rethinking, too, when I said that I believe President Putin over our own intelligence committee. But, you know, this is why we're waiting for facts, mm-hmm. and we're not waiting to make our judgments. Impeachment, conspiracy with foreign governments to change our election results. These are very serious threats to our democracy. So I am puzzled by this president. I am continued to be alarmed by him. I think his untruthfulness, the way he tries to divide this country, are very dangerous approaches that really impact the foundation of our democracy and the safety and security of the American people. But I am not surprised and, in fact, I'm relieved that it appears that nobody was actually working with Russian agents to undermine our elections. And I think that we need to see this report so that everybody has confidence in the determinations of Mr. Mueller and of Attorney General Barr's interpretation of his work. And then we can move forward. But what has been exposed here is that this administration and Donald Trump surrounds himself with corrupt people. And that will continue to be something that is of great concern to the American people and to members of Congress.
Congresswoman, we really appreciate your time.
Well,
Thanks so much.
Good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Congresswoman Catherine
Clark. Before you do what you're about, you know what's interesting?
What
the Congresswoman said at the end, which really does deserve emphasis. We all know that, what was it, the 17 intelligence agencies concluded about a year ago that there had been Russian interference.
Oh, I think there's
the special counsel
no doubt
reaffirmed
about that.
Did you hear the President of the United States yesterday in a statement before he got on Air Force One say anything about that or on the White House lawn?
Well, he's not.
Have we heard anything about it in the last? I mean, that is the underlying notion, even if there was no illegal Trump collaboration, that people shouldn't lose sight of. And there's another election just a year and a half away.
Well, they're probably doing a very good job right now.
In any case, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when she said what she said at the end, it just struck me again.
That was, of course, the voice of Congresswoman Catherine Clark. She's the vice chair of the House Democratic Caucus. She represents the 5th District. And I want to thank the Congresswoman again for taking the time to join us. Coming up, we are opening the lines and asking you about the end of the Mueller investigation and what you make of William Barr's summary. That's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing.
Is that Patsy Cline or Patty Page? Which is it? Does anybody know? I think it's Patty Page, actually. It's great. And that really, I couldn't have said it better myself. Is that all there is? Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. 2 years, 19 lawyers, 40 FBI agents, 2,800 subpoenas, 500 search warrants, and approximately 500 witnesses. The letter by Attorney General William Barr, which details the main findings of Mueller's investigation, have two main takeaways. As we've said repeatedly today, no collusion with Russia and no conclusions about whether Trump illegally obstructed justice, at least by Robert Mueller. We'll take your calls asking you, is this a big nothing? Were you hoping for more? Are you relieved that there was not more, that there was no collusion? Have your dreams of Don Jr. going the perp walk route been dashed? And what do you want the Democrats to do? Or are you done? Have you basically decided enough? I was waiting for the Mueller report. We got it. I may be happy or unhappy, but let's move on. What's your take on what you heard yesterday at about 4 o'clock? 877-301-8970 is our phone number.
Would you like to give your conclusions, Jim?
I think the discussions today have been actually pretty useful. I think there are a couple of takeaways. One, the obstruction question is totally open, and particularly after speaking to Michael Zeldin, but with all our guests today, you get the sense that there was a disagreement here, a pretty strong disagreement between Mueller and Barr. And I will go a little farther than Michael Zeldin was willing to go. It's pretty obvious to me if he was going to exonerate. Would you not agree with this? If Mueller was going to exonerate Trump on the obstruction charges, obviously Barr would have preferred far more to just say Mueller exonerated him so there's no suspicion around Barr because of his 19-page memo before he was attorney general for the second time. So one must assume that at minimum Mueller was leaning in that direction, if not more. But regardless, Congress has to do its job. I got into a heated thing with Shannon O'Brien this morning, and I think it's because we misunderstood each other, and my apologies to her. the issue to me is not should they pursue their constitutional obligation to investigate. Of course they should. The issue I was trying to express was politically it is really charged for the Democrats because I think a lot of people are going to say Marjorie, not because they're stupid, as you were suggesting that I was suggesting, but that they're done. I've had enough investigations. I was waiting on Mueller. If Mueller couldn't find enough dirt, says Jane American, on this guy, I want to move on to health care.
Listen, I am no fan of the president. He had a wonderful victory in this. He's been saying no collusion, no collusion, no collusion. Now, we don't know why everybody was so weird about Russia. We have no idea, including the president himself, but there was no collusion. That is a huge victory. But the other half of it is the special counsel stating he does not conclude the president committed a crime, but he does not exonerate him of that crime. That's kind of a big deal to me. So I think that the Democrats—
Yeah, but you were talking a totally— You're doing what Shannon was doing.
I'm not.
I don't disagree with you. I just think it is a minefield for Democrats. You think the American public is sitting at home saying, I want to have them complete their investigation.
But I guess what I'm saying, Jim, is that to ignore that makes the Democrats look ridiculous.
I'm not saying that either.
Okay, so what is your
I'm saying if I was
suggestion?
Jerry Nadler, I would not have held a press conference 6 seconds in my home turf in New York after Barr's report or summary came out yesterday. The ink is literally not dry. And I agree with you. I don't care. Hopefully, if you love Donald Trump, people agree with you that they're unanswered questions. And Congress's job, why we pay them, is to investigate. The Republicans didn't do their job when they controlled the House. I'm just saying they may do their job and there may be a huge price to pay for it because I believe that people are not – you act, I think, as if there's an intellectual decision being made by a lot of voters about this. Well, I read the line about no exoneration, so I want it pursued. I think there's more of an emotional thing. I've been going through this, says an American in Ohio or Wisconsin, for 2 years almost with Mueller. Everybody said, let's wait for Mueller. Well, we got the Mueller report. I am done. And if I'm not done, tread very carefully, Mr. or Ms. Democrat. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying they shouldn't do their jobs. I'm saying they should do their jobs. They just have to be really careful. I think, by the way, that's why Nancy Pelosi, who you're a big fan of, that's why Nancy Pelosi did what she did on impeachment for the exact same reason that I'm saying they have to tread carefully here. That's all.
Well, Nancy Pelosi is also saying that Barr is
compromised,
biased.
And
that is true because in the memo that he wrote before he became the attorney general, he went on and on and on about obstruction of justice. Mueller should not be permitted to demand the president submit to interrogation. Mueller's obstruction theory is fatally misconceived. Mueller is proposing an unprecedented expansion of obstruction law so as to reach a facially lawful actions. I don't understand what that. But in any case, he goes on and on and on about how Mueller's theories about obstruction of justice are terrible. And he's not alone, but there's a divide in the legal community about
this. I agree.
So I think that Pelosi and Democrats, so as not to totally pull take the wind out of the sails completely, because if you don't like the president, the wind out of the sails has already happened with collusion, to not double the harm by not proceeding with political astuteness about the obstruction of justice charge. They have to do
it. Elaine from Milford, you're next on Boston Public Radio. Thank you much for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about what collusion entails, and if the president could have just told his cohorts to, you do this, and you ask Russia to do this for us. I'm not getting involved. I think of him as I said, Teflon Don. To me, he's a thug, and he's surrounded by a bunch of other thugs, and I don't know where this ends.
I can answer your question. First of all, we don't know all the background facts, but if the president instructed his underlings to conspire, because collusion is not a term of art, even though we use it that way, let's use it, collude with the Russians, and even if he insulated himself adequately so no one knew, then why didn't Mueller charge them for conspiring with the Russians? None of them were charged. So the conclusion that on collusion alone that Mueller reached was that not only did the president not commit a crime on that front, but that none of his campaign aides, children, and close allies did. So you may be convinced he did conspire with the Russians. Robert Mueller concluded otherwise, and we'll see where Congress goes. Elaine, thank you very much for the call.
I thought the best explanation for this, I mentioned this to you, was on The Daily, my favorite podcast from the New York
Times
this
morning.
Line. When they talked about the people on the Trump campaign being collusion curious.
I love that term.
That Don Jr. was anxious to go hear what the Russian woman that said, you know, she had dirt on Hillary had to say. There were other people that were interested in talking to the Russians about this, you know, the WikiLeaks thing and stuff. But there was no conspiracy and effort or organized effort to collude with the Russians. I mean, that seems pretty clear, and you got to give the president his due on that. I mean, I think that's pretty clear.
But the bar has changed, though. And one of the questions we haven't had time to address today, and maybe we'll tomorrow, maybe we'll now, is if collusion curiosity, to use that wonderful term, is legal, then is there a new bar for what you can do with foreign governments and adversaries that most of us thought was illegal? Where's the line that you can walk up to but not cross with future presidencies? David and Dedham, you're next on Boston Public Radio. Hey, Dave.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was done with this investigation before it even began, because anyone who has the most basic understanding of history and geopolitics knows that America's enemies and America's Democrats have shared the same political agenda for at least about 100 years
David,
now.
David, can I ask a question? Are you going to call every day and make the exact same point you make every single day? And every day you make that stupid point, I say, can you give me some facts to back it up? You never have any facts. Here's the deal, Dave. My email is bpr@wgbh.org. When you have proof or any fact to back up these absurd, absurd allegations you make every day on our phone, I promise I will call you. You don't have to call me, and you'll be on the air. But until you do, these kind of allegations with no factual base, I'm sorry, this is not the place for it. Thank you again for your daily phone call. John and Gardner, you're next on Boston Public Radio. Hey, John.
Hey, kids. How are we all doing?
Good.
I'm shocked, and I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, who's Tom Terrific going to throw the ball to now?
That's what I said. I heard a line somebody said on Twitter or something this morning. Is Brady going to be the first quarterback ever to have no receivers? So, but we're not going to get to that till Trenny calls
but
in.
Seriously,
tomorrow.
If you give me a minute, I sure. got a couple of points and a couple of points to support both of you. I am concerned about the filter of going through Barr and Rosenstein. I ask rhetorically, do any of us know where he really stands, or is he just some malleable bureaucrat?
Well, he appointed Mueller.
He signed that letter.
Excuse me. He appointed Mueller when he was acting attorney general, so he's not some Trump flunky, if that's your question.
I'm sorry. He signed the letter supporting Trump firing Comey, and now he's signing on to this. I'm just saying, he may be a straight shooter, or who knows. But Marjorie, you talk about overplaying your hand, right? I would have called last week, but I needed a topic where it could – I always stick on the topic, right, Jim? So I wanted to stay
Not
on
really.
The topic. I was already concerned about the way the Democrats are overplaying their hand. And thank goodness the election is next month, because this is going to energize the you-know-what out of Trump's people. Now, we have a year and a half to go, but I think the Democrats have been overplaying their hand in how they're running for president – pretty much almost all of them, and now we got this. I'm really concerned about
that election.
But
John, the people running for president are almost never talking about Trump. They're always doing the
Kirsten Gillibrand had her kickoff outside Trump Tower yesterday.
Out on the campaign trail, I mean, you hear, what was the guy's name? Buttigieg? I can never pronounce
Buttigieg,
it.
Yeah.
Him and little Beto with his hands wildly and Elizabeth Warren. They're all talking. They're not, I don't think, focusing on this.
No. Jim, I know you got to go, but let me just say, I'm talking about like ID identity politics, social, and I'm couching this and I'm putting this in the harsh terms that the Republicans and the Fox will use, but socialism, rich people are evil, Trump's a crook, electoral college, packing the Supreme Court, all of these things I think are going to give Fox and the Republicans a lot of big ammunition.
John, thanks for the call. We appreciate
John,
it as always.
Thank you very much. We're taking your calls on all things having to do with Robert Mueller, the Attorney General, the report. That conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
by the way, was Patty Page, and thank you for all of your email and that sort of thing. If you're just tuning in, we're taking your calls on all things Mueller Report. Well, it's actually not the Mueller Report. On the Barr summary of the Mueller Report, 877-301-8970. Where do you want to go, Marjorie?
Let's go to Mike in Framingham. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Mike.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hi.
Thanks for letting me in.
Sure.
Thank you.
I'm just gonna rattle off a list here, and these are actual facts, unlike the world there David lives in.
Mm-hmm.
The Trump people conspired to get a back channel with Russia and were caught through the Trump Tower. They also had a meeting with people from Russia, the government, to get dirt on Hillary. They were also caught giving polling information to the Russians. Donald Trump had meetings with Putin with nobody there but interpreters, and the interpreters, their information was required to kept quiet and secret. Now, and then he, right there on the stage, asked for Russia to find Hillary's emails, and right on TV, he admitted to firing Comey because Comey did not want to stop the investigation with him and Russia. Now, this whole list is facts. How can anybody even debate that there wasn't collusion? What part of that doesn't ring collusion straight up? And then last but not least, this guy, Mueller did not force him to interview him face to face, I lost my credit. I thought Mueller lost his credibility.
I have to say on that, not only were all the items you listed factual to my knowledge as well, Mike, I felt the same way. I still don't understand Michael Zeldin's explanation. I understood as a lawyer, I didn't understand why he didn't at least attempt to interview the president. But that, Mike, your list of facts in question is exactly why a Democratic congressperson like the one we just spoke to, Catherine Clark, would say that's why we need the full report and all the evidence underlying it to find out why Mueller reached the conclusions he did on collusion. Obviously, he didn't reach a conclusion on obstruction, and we may reach a different conclusion based on our hearing. So I think you make good points, Mike. Thank you for the call. Aren't you surprised he didn't attempt to interview the president?
Well, I am surprised. The big unanswered question here on this collusion thing is, then why was everybody lying? Why was everybody telling these tall tales? Why did they go in and face federal agents and pay a penalty for lying?
Because they thought that the campaign was crossing the line, and Mueller may have thought they crossed the line, but not a criminal line.
Exactly.
That's the only thing
that's the only thing you can get to. That, yeah. They all got nervous, yeah, because they thought, oh my God, we're talking to all these Russians, and this doesn't look good. And don't forget, remember when Trump was celebrating with the Russian ambassadors? You know, they're all
the
in
day
there.
After.
Yes.
Yeah, in the Oval Office.
So it all looks so bizarre. And, of course, the president has denied, even though everybody else, including the Mueller report and the intelligence agencies, has said the Russians interfered with our election to hurt Hillary Clinton and to help Donald Trump. Maybe it's as simple as just that thought just drives them bananas.
The reason I'm laughing is the thing at the bottom of the screen on CNN is Trump concedes Mueller acted honorably during probe. I assume that was in a press availability during the press conference with Netanyahu a minute ago. So here's what he is. He behaved honorably. I've been exonerated, even though I haven't on everything. And the same guy who exonerated me, who I'm celebrating, engaged in an illegal witch
illegal
hunt
takedown.
For 600 illegal
yes,
takedown.
Yes,
right.
Called it an illegal takedown.
It's just this world is.
And you and I think the average person thinks, why would as this is not an original thought?
Go ahead.
Why do you act guilty if you're not guilty? And that was what seemed so odd about this. And I think that's why so many people have been
shocked.
Well,
he kept saying no collusion, witch hunt. They counted him up yesterday.
He was
200 plus times.
He acted guilty. He was obsessed with the fact that Jeff Sessions was his attorney
that's
general
a good point.
And didn't
and
tell him he wasn't
himself.
Going to recuse
that's
himself
right.
from
you're
that.
Right.
He was. He told you're Lester right. Holt, he was, you know, I got rid of Comey, end of problem. He tells the Russians, I got rid of Comey, end of this Russia thing. I mean, he was clearly obsessed. So why be obsessed? That's a great mystery. And maybe we'll never know. I don't know. Maybe 50 years from now, somebody will write a book and explain
you know
it.
I was about to quote something Michael Zeldin said to us. You know what we forgot to say?
What?
The second the segment was over with Michael Zeldin, former colleague, special special assistance to Mueller,
yeah.
he became a sustaining member.
I know.
And yes. since he's not going to be in town for the Craft Beer Festival, we're going to do something with his tickets, but not today. Michael, thank you. We should have said that before.
It's very generous of him.
Ivy in Providence here next on Boston Public Radio with Marjorie Egan and me, Jim Browdy. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, guys. Marjorie, you're like my hero. Jim, I love you too, but Marjorie, I love you.
Oh, thank you,
Ivy.
You
are like my inspiration. But I was going to say, like, I am not a Trump supporter by any means, by any stretch of the imagination. I would love to see him impeached, but I'm America over party. I'm America over anything else. I would much rather have a clean and cleared president than to see him impeached. Even though if he was impeached, I'd be right, and I would love to be right, but hey, can't have everything we want. Barr's report that he wrote before or right after he became attorney general denouncing the investigation was 5 times longer than the memo that he released over the weekend.
That is brilliant.
I don't trust him. He's scummy. He was appointed by him. We need to see the facts. Like Mueller's statement that he was neither incriminated nor exonerated or whatever the quote is.
Yeah.
That says to me that we need to form our own conclusions. He did not say one way or the other because he wants that report to be released and he wants Congress and the people of America to make their own decisions based on the facts that he gave. He wants to remain impartial and I think that's an honorable thing and we need to see it.
Ivy, that was a great call. Thank you.
You know, Ivy,
the five times as long thing is a great line.
But you raised another great point,
What's
too.
That?
I am not a fan of the president either. But I must say, if Mueller had come out and said that Trump was a Russian agent, it would have really been – I don't think I could take it. I would have had a nervous breakdown because you would just – you would think, okay – the president's a Russian agent, but the Republicans are going to deny it. Nothing's going to happen, and we're going to be run for the next 2 years or 6 years.
Well, you know, you just raised
the James Bond of 1600 Pennsylvania.
So, how
Avenue.
Do you explain Andrew McCabe, former acting head of the FBI, says to Anderson Cooper a month ago? And you assume even if he wasn't privy to the Mueller's investigation, because Mueller really did keep a lid on it, he obviously is privy to everything else that's going on in the FBI intelligence community. He says to Anderson Cooper, essentially, and I'll paraphrase, not only might he have been a Russian agent, he might still be a Russian agent.
Correct.
That was a month before the Mueller report. He had to know something, didn't he?
Well, I think, based on what they talked about at that time, that he and Rosenstein and some other people that were there initially were so shocked by the president's firing Comey to get rid of this Russian investigation. And then they were talking about that Steele dossier, which has taken a way back seat now. We don't know what was true or wasn't true about that. I think that they genuinely freaked out. I mean,
remember, was it John Brennan who a couple of weeks ago, the former head of the CIA, was saying the Mueller investigation is going to end today? There was a Friday. Or tomorrow, because the next day was a Friday, because Mueller's going to – tomorrow he's going to indict Donald Jr., and as soon as he indicts Donald Jr., Trump is going to fire Mueller because he indicted his kid, and the investigation's going to be over. Spent their whole lives in the law enforcement intelligence infrastructure have no clue what was really going on?
I think there were millions of Americans rooting for the indictment of that little brat.
Well, you were obviously in that terribly embarrassing column you wrote a couple of weeks ago, the orange
My fantasy
jumpsuits.
Of Don Jr. in an orange jumpsuit.
I remember it well. Lynn in Hanover, you're next on Boston Public Radio. Thanks for your patience. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I just wanted to say one of the things that struck me was that Mueller had said he couldn't establish the collusion conspiracy type thing, but he also didn't interview Trump. I don't think he interviewed Jared Kushner. I thought he couldn't get the subpoena on him.
I don't think so.
He did
or
not.
Junior. So it's like, how can you – he's saying without saying, I wasn't actually allowed to get to them, so it couldn't be established. But I don't see how anybody who has a right mind could say that there's nothing there.
Well, and can I respond before you continue, Lynn? One of the things we learned yesterday – or was it the day before, that there was no Mueller request that was turned down? Is that not correct, Marjorie? So when you say whatever you said a minute ago about going after at least questioning the son or the son-in-law, I'm assuming from what the reports were that had he attempted to and been thwarted by either whoever was running, Whitaker, Rosenstein, Barr, whomever, then they wouldn't have said that no requests were denied. So the assumption is he didn't even try.
But I do think he would have known what would have happened.
I don't know.
How much of a quagmire the whole thing would have been in.
Maybe.
I don't know. Think he really came out. I don't think he came out emphatically saying that. I really don't. And I think that, you know, he dropped little hints in there, I would imagine. And I think that's why he shoved a lot off to the States.
To the Lynn, thank you. Oh, to the States.
That
not
good
states,
point.
I mean like the Southern District of New York.
I think there are about 12 there. Other investigations going on in different jurisdictions,
you know,
Washington, D.C., New York City, Manhattan, the Southern District, all that.
New York State. You know, one of the things that Lynn said that triggered the following is subject to totally legitimate reasons not to disclose certain parts of the report. And I thought Michael Zeldin made a very good point that maybe the classified stuff or the grand jury stuff, the underlying facts are in the appendix. Mm-hmm. So the report itself may have been pre-scrubbed, to use that horrible expression that was used a lot yesterday. One, we should get to see that as soon, or as much of it as we can. And secondly, Mueller should testify in front of Congress. I mean, and he seems to be the kind of cop who is not going to will refuse to answer those things that are inappropriate for the public to know. But this notion that we have to ask all these questions, and we don't know if we're going to be asking all these questions forever. I don't mean just you and me. I mean every member of the public, every caller. Have the principal people. Barr should testify. The report should be made public. Why did you decide not to prosecute on obstruction when you're given the pros and the cons by Mueller? Mueller, why did you not make a recommendation? How about all the questions that the prior callers broached?
Well, Barr basically said in his report that Mueller did not exonerate the president, but I've decided to exonerate the president on obstruction.
Exactly.
That's essentially what he said.
Yeah.
And you have to remember that Barr was appointed by the president and that Barr is a guy that wrote this 19-page opus on the problems with Mueller's theories of obstruction of justice. So,
as Ivy said, five times as long as the report he submitted to Congress.
It's not insane for people to say that there may be a bit of a bias there.
I think it's not insane at all. We don't know that there is, but it's not insane to say it. Let's go to
Dan in the car.
Hi, Dan.
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
Great.
Hi, thanks.
I just have a statement. If there was 100% no collusion and 100% no obstruction and we're 100% exonerated, then what's the issue about releasing the report?
Well, Trump was asked that question last, or maybe Sarah Sanders was, and the answer was, I think, what it's always been is I'm fine with it, but it's Barr's decision, which technically it is. And the bases for refusal to disclose certain part, this could be national security, legitimate executive privilege, grand jury testimony. But as Michael Zeldin, I thought, said beautifully, Mueller's a pretty smart guy. And the assumption is the report itself probably doesn't include much of that. So I'm with you. I think there are too many questions and probably enough protection built in that we should see this thing as quickly as is possible. Dan, thanks for the call. And I assume, remember the Congress voted 420-0. Every single Republican who voted with the Democrats to have the report made public. And I think we've waited a day and it's got to come. It's got to come soon.
Okay. We are taking a break from the Mueller investigation.
We'll get more calls a little later, by the way.
Yes, we're going to get back to this a little bit later because I think we're all kind of obsessed with this today. But right now, we're going to take a break for All Revved Up with the Reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price. They are next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie. And here with us in Studio 3 to take on the moral dilemmas of the day are Reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price. Irene is a syndicated religion columnist, Boston voice for Detour's African American Heritage Trail, visiting research in the Religion and Conflict Transformation Program at BU School of Theology. Emmett's professor and founding executive director of the Institute for the Study of Black Christian Experience at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. Irene and Emmett, good to see you both.
Hey, thanks for having
us. I'm glad
back.
To be here. I'm excited to hear. Did Marjorie go get some marijuana? It was in your neighborhood.
I know. Well, I haven't officially gone yet to get the marijuana because it wasn't open, but I did a story about it. And let me tell you, It's a swank marijuana store.
Is it really?
Yeah. Well, it's in the old Brookline Bank building with these huge dome of light and the mahogany stairs and vaults and doors. It's very, very snazzy.
I want to ask you a favor then.
What?
For two reasons. Yeah. One, I don't like lines, but when you go get yours, could you get mine?
And in particular, you want some edibles? You want one of those pens?
Mix it up for me.
Mix it up. Okay. Okay, Irene, I'll take care of you. Okay. So let's start. This was rather surprising. A TD Bank apologizing following criticism for their racist advertisement mentioning Dorchester. The ad that they put up, a big ad inside one of their branches in the Back Bay, when you're downtown but your debit card's somewhere in Dorchester, we replace lost debit cards on the spot.
And there's another one, Marjorie.
Give us the other one.
It says, we'll keep your work stuff safe if you go to Alewife, which is in Cambridge. It says, and your phone goes to Mattapan.
Well, that was a couple of years ago. Yeah, Samsung.
Yeah, so what'd you make of this?
Well, I didn't make anything of it. I mean, I'm not a customer, and if I was a customer, I'd have to think about my banking protocols, because I think we are in a day and age now where this is absolutely unacceptable. I mean, you don't make faux pas like this.
That's right.
Whoever's in your advertising, marketing, needs to have a conversation about diversity and inclusivity, particularly if you're trying to be the community's bank, if you're trying to be the bank
of the people.
Of the people.
That's right.
This is just incendiary. It's horrific.
And their apology, in my opinion, is more than a day late and a dollar short, because I think that it reinscribes that racist trope that black people steal. But what it bothers me most is that it really dissuades investors, developers, and homeowners to invest in these type of communities. And that's what really bothers me the most, because people are afraid to go into these type of neighborhoods.
Well, I think
here.
It does the opposite. I think it actually helps in terms of this notion of regentrification, because there are some extremely wealthy places, neighborhoods
Dorchester.
Within Dorchester.
Yeah, I know.
So the whole notion that Dorchester is quote unquote hood or a favela or whatever terminology you want to use is not only horrific, but it reinscribes the notion that, hey, we're going to get rid of the X factor so that you all could come in. Let's finish the job. I mean,
but
it's
see,
horrible.
But I don't think it's really that appealing. I really think it's really to target and to denigrate the residents that live in those enclaves. But I will say this, though. I do think that if Old Southie was Old Southie, I think we would see something similar, a similar kind of advertisement.
You know, the thing that I always think about in situations like this, which may be a tad off topic, in a minute we're going to talk about Barbara Streisand's stupidity. But the assumption is she exhibited her stupidity by herself. What I always wonder about things like the TD Bank deal or the Samsung, who was sitting in the room when, and I assume when you put up an ad, it's not one man or woman, bunch of people who are, and no one in the room said, I think there's an issue or maybe an issue with this. That, to me, is more disturbing in some ways than the underlying thing is that nobody realized. You know what it reminds me of? And this is maybe way out there. Remember the classic photograph when George W. signed some abortion restriction?
Oh, yeah.
And the photograph was on the front page of the New York Times with
27
all white men. And you say to yourself, did someone think, even if they don't care about women, that maybe they should shove a woman into the photograph or an African-American or something
for a photo op moment.
But here, you say to yourself again, no one thought of this, which is
they thought it was funny.
Yeah,
they thought it was funny. And I mean, and that's part of the issue, right? So when you don't have inclusivity, when you don't even have visibility, when you don't even have access to the power dynamic in the room to actually object, the person who may have all the authority.
Point.
Yeah.
I mean, what
but
do you
see,
do?
I make this assumption too. This is what I assume, which I don't assume anymore. I don't assume because you're a person of color that you have a race analysis, because you very well could have had a person in color in that room and also thought what Emmett said, thought that it was indeed funny. And we got to remember, we do have black white supremacists like, Clarence Thomas and Ben Carson. So this
supremacist.
But what I mean by black white supremacists here, I mean that they have the power to affect policy. Yeah, I mean, they're not Uncle Toms. These are people that really can affect policy and hurt people.
Who was the second one you listed?
Ben Carson.
Ben Carson.
Yeah. Yeah, but my point about that is that it points to, even though if there are young people in the room, we still have a problem with race because we assume a younger generation would be more woke about the issue, as we assume that people of color would be woke about the issue. And that's the thing I just want to say also about white supremacy. It doesn't just infect the minds of white people, but also those of black people.
We're talking to Irene Monroe and Emmett Price. So speaking of Barbara Streisand, here's what she had to say to the Times of London about Michael Jackson. She said a few things. You can say molested, talking about the two guys, Safechuck and Robson, who we all saw in Leaving Neverland, the two young men who were molested as little boys and then become the major voices in the film. But those children, as you heard say, they were thrilled to be there, she said, of Robson and Safechuck. They both married and they have children, so it didn't kill them. She goes on to say his sexual needs, meaning Michael. You can laugh because I feel the same. This is so demented. His sexual needs were his sexual needs, coming from whatever childhood or whatever DNA he has. Now, she did profoundly sorry the next day.
You have to assume,
and also, I don't even mean this is a joke, she had to be drunk or she had to be under the influence. This is so profoundly disgusting. It is just...
You know what I realize? We love Barbara Streisand, and she's certainly lauded as one of our, you know, progressives here. And I've learned a couple of things, because it seems so out of character. It really does.
Yeah.
But I kind of really begin to understand. And I would think that the fact that Oprah had supported the boys and the film, the documentary, that would be enough for her to not, like, give that kind of remark. But I'm beginning to learn more and more as I hear people talk about, they don't really understand sexual molestation.
You're right.
I think they don't understand that the first phase is sexual seduction, that kind of play-like thing. It's grooming, and then it's the actual assault. And I think that she kind of hinted about the parents, he was grooming the parents as well. And I think that what really bothers me, even about the parents, though, but I'm not faulting them because he was very good at disguising himself, that even though he presented himself as a big kid, he was a big kid with adult genitalia. That's the thing that got me there. And it also bothers me that someone like Michael trying to recapture his innocence, he was ruining the innocence of his victims.
By the way, I'm with her on the parents, but she blames the parents in isolation, not Jackson at all.
I mean, one of the biggest issues here, first of all, where is her publicist? And why would you allow her to sit down with the Washington Post journalist to do this interview? I would have shut the thing down.
Times of London is where
it is. Times of London, sorry. And I think the other piece
we
tend to think that the illness of TMI, right, too much information, is a millennial issue. This is horrific.
It's horrific. It's unconscionable.
I just looked up her publicist. You said, where was he or she? He had just worked for TD Bank, and it just came out.
Explains it. Say no more. Really? Say no more.
By the way, just listen to this line one more time. I mean, there's no grown, and she's a smart woman.
Oh, yes, she is.
I don't know her, but I know of
her. My homegirl from Brooklyn.
You can say molested, but those children, as you heard say, they were thrilled to be there. They both married, and they both have children, so it didn't kill them. I mean, it is so
horrific.
Horrible.
Yeah, re-traumatization of people's narratives, and then we're back to again not hearing people,
right?
Not hearing what these folks say.
But also believing that if they were in the situation, they would do something totally different. One of the things I've heard when I sit down, you know, with folks who are talking to me about the issues, if someone has been raped, they will always say, "But I would have never been in that situation." And it's always the assumption about either because of the hour of the day or the desolation of where you were, you know, or drinking while not being, you know, conscious, you know,
all of that
sort of stuff. And I think that what it does is that those kind of things really tap into how vulnerable we are on these issues. And we like to believe we would emerge quite differently.
Well, I think the great thing about this Neverland thing was I think it really explained so well the dynamics with children. You know, you could just have
the grooming thing you're talking
about? Yes. And how one of the great myths is that, you know, it's some stranger dragging you off when it's usually someone you know and you may love and you trust. And then
we learned that in the Catholic Church, didn't
we? Exactly.
That's
right. And the confusion of these children, I thought that was so important because I think that's very common.
Well, we were able to hear it this time.
Right from their words.
Have we not evolved as a culture in understanding that? Me too. Because we could hear now, me too. So I that's the great thing about justice. You know, the arc has always, you know, been towards justice. And these kids are getting that. These young men, I should say.
Battered women. It's like sexual assault, or as you just mentioned.
We just have to move on racism. How about that? And xenophobia and Islamophobia. Should I just run the list down?
No. So is the arc bending towards justice in the Catholic Church? The latest story, I assume people have heard about
this. You just don't want to give it up, do you?
The Pope finally replaces this Chilean cardinal who was accused of sexual abuse cover-up. I'm a due process person. However, it's been 2 years since this guy submitted his resignation. About this, and people know the whole Chilean thing when essentially the Pope engaged in a blame the victim or not believe the victim, and then ultimately he came around and had to apologize and that sort of thing. This article I read in the New York Times, in addition to taking 2 years to replace this cardinal, I believe he keeps the title too or something, but in any case, Francis summoned all of Chile's 30-plus active bishops to the Vatican last May and strong-armed them into offering the resignations. To date, he's accepted fewer than 10 of the resignations, which means two-thirds of them are there. Now, maybe he has concluded they didn't do anything wrong, but it's further evidence. We get a lot of angry email every time we discuss this with you guys.
Yeah,
it is so obvious to say there is no sense of urgency about any of this is an understatement. And you're pretty, you're probably more fair-minded, Emmett, when it comes to the Catholic Church. No, I'm going to say than I am. Actually, now I think about it. But what's your reaction to this?
Well, the piece for me is the cardinal retired. Pope Francis didn't receive the retirement, kept him on. And then the announcement comes a day after an appeals court in Chile allowed prosecutors to continue investigating the situation.
I forgot about that. That's a really
important
point.
So this is, again, horrible.
So it's like his hand was forced.
Yes, that's right.
It's horrible. But I have a statement. I thought about this when I read this morning, and I thought about you, Marjorie. So my statement is to you. I know that you love a church that has spiritually abused its parishioners. And I know as a person like you who is very devout about your faith and clearly understand it, that you don't want to throw the baby with the bathwater. However, there's so much bathwater, meaning the Catholic Church, that it's drowning, and that you know the church because of its ritual, the Catholic workers. You know that part of it. But we can't get there when we find out from last month's Vatican meeting that they've thrown away the records, that they can't handle it. And so these people got to go. If you want any inkling of that church that you know existed for you as a kid.
Well, when I was a kid, it was in the height of all this was going on.
I mean,
raping right and left by the thousands. So, you know, let's hope they're doing a little less raping now because the jig is up. But, I mean, nobody's going to argue with you, Irene. You don't have to tell me. I mean, I think people recognize Catholics that it's a disaster.
Yeah.
And the question is, what are they going to do?
Yeah, well, I think the one thing where there's not agreement, you're so much more modest. No Catholic I know in the media had tougher things about the hierarchy of this church in your years as a columnist than you, frankly.
Yeah.
They were brilliant from law through. But the big debate where I don't think there is unanimity here is because this cardinal has done so many good things with poor people, with immigrants, people are more reluctant than, in my opinion, they should be. I'm not looking at you. I'm looking to call him out for this unconscionable delay in dealing with this worldwide
problem.
Sexual violence ring.
Because when we think of monsters, we don't think of them as us. That they're people that live among us that will do good things around certain things and do horrific things in the dark. That's just it.
Well, I don't think he's a monster. I think he is. Been really ignorant about this, and I think
he chooses to stay ignorant.
And he's not making much progress.
You don't call that a monster?
No, I don't. I'm not. I think that he has been horrible about this, And I think,
but he knows. See, it's no longer complicit. He see, because you know, he knows it's been in his face.
Well,
so whatever his behavior has been monstrous.
Whatever you call him, again, it's time to think about the exit strategy.
Yeah,
and
there you
on
go.
On the way out. Let's advocate for statute of limitations to be removed so that all these cases can be tried. Let's drop all the names of the accused and stop hiding
How
them in files.
How could they have been expunged?
They're somewhere.
Okay.
And then let's allow him to step down.
I think a lot of people think that there's going to be a schism in the church.
Well,
because you have these other countries where they are way behind.
That's right.
I mean, totally behind.
Well,
it doesn't even happen.
Well,
and you see whether the American church is or is going to separate the Canadians and the Americans. I don't know.
Well, we're seeing that in the Methodist church, you know, the Americans versus, the world.
Yeah.
So we definitely see this. But if he leaves, I want him to leave those red shoes, too.
Did you see, speaking of red shoes.
Who doesn't wear the red shoes?
Did you see that the
previous guy wore the red shoes.
Did you see that the voting in the last Pope election was leaked the other day? I haven't talked to you about this.
No.
And you see who came in number four in the voting? Cardinal O'Malley.
Really?
Number four.
Wow.
Yeah,
and I had respect for him until
this
recently.
In the Globe the other,
right.
the other day.
Yeah, I loved him a lot, but not anymore.
In any case, good to see you both. Be well.
Okay. Irene Monroe is a syndicated religion columnist, the Boston's voice for Detour's African American Heritage Trail, a visiting researcher in the Religion and Conflict Transformation Program at BU's School of Theology. Emmett Price is a professor and founding executive director of the Institute for the Study of the Black Christian Experience at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. Up next, what is up next? We're talking more about Mr.
Charlie
Mueller.
Sennett.
Oh, Charlie Sennett is up next. Thank you, Jim. What would I do without you? Charlie Sennett is up next. We're going to talk about Brexit. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Ahead of this Friday's original Brexit deadline, Donald Trump Jr. criticized Theresa May in an opinion piece for The Telegraph for failing to make a speedy exit from the EU. He accuses liberal elites of sabotaging the process, and he goes on to compare Brexit to his father's presidential win, saying both of them were victories over establishments that have since tried to overturn their mandates. Here with us in Studio 3 is Charlie Sennett. He sees another way that Brexit and the 2016 elections are similar, the role Russia appears to have had in both. He joins us to talk about this and what's next for U.S.-Russia relations now that the Mueller investigation is over. Charlie's a news analyst here at GBH, where he also heads up the Ground Truth Project. Charlie, good to see you.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Marjorie.
Hey, great to see you, Charlie. So the summary that we have of the Mueller report indicates without question that the Russians did interfere with our election. So what is the relation to that and Brexit?
Look, the UK is dealing with the same findings, that they have evidence that Russia also interfered with the Brexit vote. The Guardian has been reporting this aggressively for over a year now, and it's just something really worth stepping back and reflecting on in these heady days of the release of the Mueller report, where we're all trying to grapple with what we know of its findings to date. We should really step back and say the one thing we are certain that comes in this report and that's been proven time and again is that Russia did interfere with our election. And it also interfered with Brexit. And these are two deeply divisive issues in these countries which have this special relationship. There is no closer ally to the United States than the UK. How is it that Russia managed to interfere and put both of these countries, ours included, into this intense political deadlock and divisiveness? And I feel like we need to think of the two in tandem now, and how we're going to get out of them in tandem.
We don't even focus on what Russia did to us. I mean, as I think Marjorie said, you know, the bar summary of the Mueller report reaffirms what the 17 intelligence agents. I think the only person in America who I'm aware of who has not acknowledged it outright is the President of the United States. And out of yesterday's report, understandably, there's so much attention on what Barr says are the conclusions of Mueller, but Mueller reaffirming this thing with an election less than 2 years away. And one would argue if the president seems unconcerned about it, then one must assume our government mechanisms
right.
are pretty much other than the intelligence agencies, unconcerned about them. So I'm so glad you brought it up.
In other words, they're doing it again as we head into 2020.
Or more importantly, because I assume they're doing it, we're arguably doing nothing to stop it.
Exactly. So, I mean, the thing, I know you're going to talk a lot about this today, but I mean, the obvious thing to take from the Mueller report is, and it's really important to say, there was no Trump-Russia conspiracy that Mueller found. That's important. Okay, that's on the record. That's important to state. But there is no sense that there wasn't a lot of activity going on in which people were not telling the truth about their relationships with Russia at a time when the election was being tampered with Russia. There are still huge questions.
Exactly. Like, why were all these people lying, convicted liars now, if there was no underlying crime that they're worried about? Obviously, that's a pretty big issue.
So I think Congress is going to have to really get the rhythm right to its response to Mueller, which is you have to accept the findings that have been issued, but also talk about the broader mandate of Congress to look into an incredibly important issue in our country, which is Russia tampered with our election. And I think we should be looking to the UK to say, look, they're also doing it here. There needs to be a global response to the kind of really dark trolling that's going on inside our democracies. The two oldest and, I would argue, strongest democracies in the world were imperiled by Russian attacks. We need to wake up. We got to focus on that as the issue ahead. And the more Democrats can take the high road on that and focus on that, I think it'll be better for the country. And then put pressure on the Republicans. Stop saying your president was exonerated, because our president, according to the Mueller report, was not exonerated. It says, quote, "While this report does not conclude the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him." So no matter how many times we hear President Trump say he was exonerated, he's not exonerated.
Yeah, but the Democrats are in a really tough spot on that, Charlie, as we've discussed already today. They trashed James Comey when he spoke out of turn and said, "I'm not prosecuting, but about Hillary Clinton." But now they're celebrating the exact same thing that's being done that they do like from Mueller. If it turns out Comey shouldn't have said, "But by the way, she did some bad things," then arguably Mueller should have refrained from the same sort of— that's what good prosecutors are supposed to do.
Yeah.
See, they really can't have both. I want to stay, though, on Trump, father, like son, though. I mentioned a minute ago, Donald Jr. I've never heard anything like this. Writes an op-ed criticizing the prime minister of— and then his father, not surprisingly, during a visit from the leader of Ireland, says Theresa May should have taken his advice during the Brexit negotiations. Here's Donald Sr.
"I'm surprised at how badly it's all gone from the standpoint of a negotiation. But I gave the prime minister my ideas on how to negotiate it, and I think you would have been successful. She didn't listen to that, and that's fine. I mean, she's got to do what she's got to do, but I think it could have been negotiated in a different manner."
I told her what to do, but she didn't listen. That's totally— so how does in terms of our international relations, our relationship with our allies, one of the allies he has not totally savaged is Theresa May, unlike, Trudeau, Macron, and the leader of Germany.
Angela Merkel.
But what is the response of the infrastructure of the British government when father and son are both trashing a woman who's hanging on by a thread?
I mean, I think sadly the reality of the rest of the world is they have become very dismissive of the president of the United States for anything he says, because he says one thing one day and another thing the next, and a lot of it's crazy, and people have stopped listening out there in the world. Where Theresa May finds herself this week is in a pretty extraordinary place. The EU Commission today, I was listening to the BBC this morning, they're talking about there is now a greater possibility of a hard Brexit than there ever has been before. So they're saying we need to begin to prepare for the possibility and the increasing likelihood of a hard Brexit, which means no deal. That could be devastating for the UK's economy. That could really put them in a tailspin. That could really change their place in the world. And I think—
well, they're talking about stockpiling food and medicine
and water. Ports in Dover are talking literally about the possibility. I heard some discussion on the BBC today around the possibility of troops having to really take to the ports to ensure that they bring some semblance of sanity to what is going to be an insane transition in how they deal with trade, how they deal with their border in Northern Ireland, and honor the Good Friday Agreement. The next few days are fateful for the UK and how this plays out. But I don't know if you saw the pictures.
Wait, we have to break for a minute, and we can discuss more in a second.
Sure.
But isn't what's the status of this extension thing?
So there's the extension has been granted. They have a little bit more time to figure this out. Today, Parliament is saying, hey, Theresa May, you've blown it. You haven't been able to lead. Let us think what are some other possibilities. Theresa May will then try to sell her deal for a third time. Unlikely she'll get it. If you do the math in Parliament, as one BBC commentator put it, no matter how you shuffle the deck, he can't see her getting this vote through.
You don't understand anything about this. I know. I just said we have to break. One last quick thing. I think I read last night that by the extended deadline, the Brits will be able to vote in the European Parliament.
They're going to have to.
So they're going to vote in an entity which they're about to depart from?
Possibly. Or, again, your age-old question, Jim. Why not have a second referendum?
Well, we're going to talk about that.
Still on the books.
As soon as we come back, we're talking to Charlie Sennett, head of the Ground Truth Project. The conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
This is Boston Public Radio on WGBH. Made possible thanks to listener contributions. Your support of just $5 or $10 a month keeps Jim and Marjorie and the great conversations coming your way. Please take a moment to give now at WGBHnews.org or call 888-897-9424.
It's match time, but only for 29 more minutes. So write down that. Well, don't write down this number. Just call it 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org. For less than 30 minutes, every single dollar you give will be matched from by a dollar, an additional dollar from the GBH member match fund. 100 becomes 200. 400 becomes 800, you know, that whole thing. Do it now. It's double bang for your buck. There's no better time, in my estimation, to do this than when the value of your money is going to be increased by 100% just by doing it. So please call now, 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. If you give 10 bucks a month, which is 120 a year, it becomes double that, 240. And not only has it become 240 to us, but you get the craft beer package. You want to describe it, Marjorie? Sure you do.
The craft beer package is two tickets to the craft beer festival, which is Saturday, July 13th. We hope for a really nice hot day, but even if it rains, they have a big tent, so it doesn't matter.
They do.
Over two dozen breweries, so they have the food trucks, which are great, and a bunch of great music, and it's going to be right out here in this huge expanse outside the studios here in Brighton. Plus, as we know, we have the Pilsner Weizen glasses.
Exactly.
I got that right. Doesn't the Visor glasses, 20 ounces.
Get two of them.
And they have the logo, WGBH logo on the side. They're pretty cool, and they're made for beer specifically. But the big deal is that from now until the end of the show, which is at 2 o'clock, and then it ends, you can get double the money, and that really matters. $10 goes to $20, obviously, $100, $200, $1,000, $2,000. It's really a great time to do it. So 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. And plus, since it's another half hour of the show, we'll get the credit for the uptick.
That's what it's all about.
You know, donating.
Let me tell you the names of some people who have just called 888-897-9424. Courtney in Epping, New Hampshire. Joel in Wellesley Hills. Kathleen in Somerset. Charles in Bellingham, Washington. I've been to Bellingham, Washington, actually. Thank you very much, Charles. And or they may have done it through WGBHnews.org. One, it's really simple. Only takes a few minutes. It's not painful at all. Two, you give whatever you can afford, as little as $5 a month. You become a member. $10 a month, you get this craft beer package. And any nickel you give is doubled, but only for 26 more minutes. So if you haven't given yet in this pledge drive, there's no better time than during this match. 888-897-9424. WGBHnews.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan talking to the head of the Ground Truth Project. That would be Charlie Sennett.
So, Charlie, before the break, we were talking about the possibility of a second Brexit vote. And, you know, some of the people we were talking about, Russia interference in the elections in Great Britain, some of the people I heard and read about over the weekend were complaining about the lies that were that they believed in when they were voting for Brexit that turned out to be not true about what was going to happen. Meanwhile, there's been how big are these protests?
So it's a million strong in the streets.
Yeah, and all these signatures.
Right?
So if a million strong in the street, 5 million signatures are asking for a second vote, is that out of the question or not?
I don't think it's out of the question. I think if you hear the BBC's political team completely perplexed on what happens next, I think we have to recognize no one knows what the next few days hold. But I think everyone would agree the next few days are fateful. The UK is going to have to decide one way or another whether it's going to go with a hard Brexit or whether it's going to get Theresa May's Brexit plan passed, which mm-hmm. seems unlikely, or if there could be cobbled together by Parliament a soft Brexit.
Could she be gone in the next few days, too?
There's a huge conservative newspaper today that just has the headline, May Get Out. And, you know, that could – there definitely could be that forcing out.
And what,
I doubt it.
What are the lies that people fell for and voted erroneously, at least they're thinking now that the vote, they want another vote?
Well, I think the way many people see it is we voted a referendum to say we will have an orderly exit that will be well planned and that will be done right and that will be approved by Parliament. What's happening now is they're being told another option, by the way, is the hard Brexit or just getting out without a deal, which no one really voted for in that referendum. But it's actually, if I'm reading, you know, the history right, it really was Theresa May who brought up this kind of idea that there is a possibility where if they're going to have a bargaining position with the EU, they have to say, so if we can't reach a deal with you, then we're leaving anyway.
But
that may have been a fateful mistake
on her part. Weren't there internal commitments, too, that if we get out of there, we'll have more money to support the
health
program? And that didn't
National
come
fast.
You know, by the way, speaking of the 5 million signatures, there are rumors that all 5 million signatures are Putin's, by the way. He just signed it with his right hand and then his left hand. It's unconfirmed.
They're all done in Russia.
He's taking over the whole world. So, I mean, let's face it.
Speaking of Russia, the incredible, you can't say this word, chutzpah, let's say, of Putin, immediately after the Mueller report,
this is great.
Russia reaches out to the United States and say, this is a perfect time. Now that there was no collusion, even though we attempted to destroy your democracy, to reset the election. I mean, it is just the whole thing. And again, as I said to you 10 minutes ago, the fact that Donald Trump is the only person who has not looked into a camera and said without any equivocation,
well,
of course Russia has interfered in our election.
And that is, of course, Putin. The two of them together. Right. They're on the same page.
Look, Mueller report says no conspiracy. That doesn't mean we don't still have questions that we have to put very forcefully to the President of the United States, which are, why did so many people in the highest levels of your campaign lie about their relationships with Russia? And will you concede the fact that everyone has accepted, which is Russia interfered with our election, and what are you going to do about it?
Could have been China. Could have been the 400-pound guy on the bed. It could have been anybody.
He's not going to do anything about it because one would presume
that's worrisome.
It's going to continue to his benefit. The president's.
Yeah. I can't be that cynical. I can't think that even President Trump would be that cynical, that he'd continue down a path where Russia continues to interfere with our election. I think some of this is going to come down to measured, sane responses on the part of a Democratic-controlled House to push hard and probe, but they are going to be walking a very delicate line because if the American public feels like they are just not seeing reality and continually going after the president in a way that is perceived as unfair, that'll come back and hurt them in 2020. So they have a tough road ahead. The Democrats need to really focus on what matters and start asking hard questions respectfully and in the right tone so we can actually get some answers around the key question, right? Which is, how is it possible that Russia interfered with our election and how do we make sure it never happens again?
Well, we just saw stories about how the president so far, and it is a matter of money to some degree because the other Democrats and anybody, Bill Weld, whoever else may run against him, doesn't have the money yet. But he's already spending more on Facebook than all of them put together. Hmm. So I think that he's probably got a very effective strategy.
Well, first of all, I don't even think he needs to be. You know, we said this already in our political thing, but I'll say it again to you, Charlie. I could do the ad right now. I'd start the ad with the 10 leading Democrats in Congress saying, we're waiting on the Mueller report, we're waiting on the Mueller report, we're waiting on the Mueller report. Then have the language in the Mueller report saying a no collusion. Then you have the president saying, I was fully exonerated and everything, whether it's true or not. And then you have Jerry Nadler standing up saying 10 seconds after the Barr summary comes out, we're going to continue our investigation. Going. And I'll tell you, maybe hardcore Democrats and some independents will say that's just, you know, that is not a reflection of reality. For the people in the middle who are tired of the fighting, tired of the dysfunction, I think Trump's got, disingenuous as it may be in part, he's got a really powerful message.
And my point about Facebook is that Facebook is where a lot of the disingenuous coming in 2016. Mm-hmm. So one would presume that it's going to keep coming and that he has a big stake already going in Facebook. And so we'll see. I mean, these divisive issues about race and religion and Muslims and Sharia law and all this kind. And, of course, immigration is just going to continue and rev people up.
The history lessons for the Democrats aren't that long ago. They just have to look at when you had President Clinton was impeached and how much the Republicans overstepped their bounds on that and they got punished for it.
His poll numbers went up after, too, after his acquittal in the Senate.
The Democrats could really blow it here. So there are hard questions, important questions to be put to the president. But the Democrats have to do a lot better than they did on the Sunday talk shows in the immediate aftermath of the Mueller report. They sound shrill. They sound like they can't accept the truth as determined by the man we all agreed was the right person to do this investigation, and that's Mueller. So we got to accept the findings.
Charlie, thank you very much. Charlie Sennett joins us every week. He's a news analyst here at WGBH, where he also heads up the Ground Truth Project. Thanks again, Charlie.
Thanks, Jim.
We are opening the lines and asking you about your take on the summary of the Mueller report and the investigation. This is 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie. And if you're just tuning in, we're going to give one more crack, at least today. I'm sure we'll return to it tomorrow, to your reaction to, I keep saying, the Robert Mueller report. We have not seen the Robert Mueller report. We've only seen the William Barr, as they, Ed Markey, the first person to call them, Cliff Notes version of it. And that is really all it is. 877-301-8970. What's your reaction to this? Does Barr's summary raise more questions than it answers? Are you disappointed about what we know so far? What's your speculation as to why the Mueller himself deferred the decision on obstruction of justice to the Attorney General, who has a, I think you could say, a sketchy history on the issue in light of the infamous 19-page memo that he volunteered when he was not Attorney General to both the Justice Department and Trump's lawyers, by the way. He met with Trump's lawyers about it, about how he believes in most cases a president cannot obstruct justice under the statute. 877-301-8970. It's your last chance today to weigh in on the Mueller-Barr connection and what you think the Democrats should do and how bold they should be. Marjorie and I have a little bit disagreement about the politics of it, not the underlying obligation they have to do their jobs. But in any case, 877-301-8970.
Russell makes a good point if you're a Democrat. He says Republicans were never tired of Trey Gowdy's multi-investigations into Hillary Clinton.
That's a great point.
The Benghazi hearings. Why wouldn't Democrats uphold the rule of law? And if there are things that need investigating, investigate them regardless of all the conspiracy chatter. It is true. How many Benghazi hearings were there? Nine?
I don't remember.
Someone could correct me. There were a lot. It was absolutely true. And now the president wants an investigation again of Hillary Clinton's wrongdoings.
What did he call them yesterday? The opposition? The whatever they were called.
Yeah, now we know, too, that there's some question about Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner and their email and their private servers and so forth. And
I know we got to get the calls very quickly. If Donald Trump, when he's about to get on Air Force One, rather than saying total exoneration, complete exoneration, and it was an illegal, what did he call it, illegal takedown that failed.
Right.
What if he had said, listen, I'm really sorry this began with. I've told you all along there was no collusion. I was proven right. However, from this moment on, we've got to work together. All the animosities, all the polarization, all the divisions have got to end if we're ever going to do anything. You know what, how that even one statement from this guy, because it's so unexpected, how much it might change things. Maybe it breaks off a few Republicans and a few Democrats who never work with each other in Congress, and maybe we actually do something here. I'll get to you, Julian. Oh, Julie, you're there. I'm sorry. Julian Fall River, you were first on Boston Public Radio. My apologies. Hi.
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 Am I on? Hi. This is Julie. I'm on the line. I'm calling from Fall River.
Hi.
Yes, hi.
Hi. I have a personal connection, obviously, to Marjorie on this, but also with you, Jim.
Yeah.
Because I worked for legal services 38 years.
Wow. That is fabulous. Yeah. I didn't make it quite that long, but near and dear to my heart,
Good for you, Julie.
Thank you. And Jim actually organized our New Bedford program.
Oh, my goodness, Julie.
So I worked with you long, long ago.
Julie, when you're done, I'm going to put you on hold and leave your last name. I'm curious to know who you are. And that's great and brings back great memories. Julie, what's your thought on this Mueller Barr thing?
Well, basically, I want to emphasize that it's the Barr summary, not the report of Mueller.
Right. Of course.
And that I think we should all take a step back and wait to hear as much as we can about what the details are that are allowed to be given to us. I agree with Charlie Sinnott regarding the fact that the Russians are still trying to undermine our democracy, not just our elections, but our democracy. And I think the other congressional investigations should continue without overstepping, but they should continue because there are issues that still have to be resolved.
For sure.
I also wanted to bring up the fact that while we're talking about the Democrats not overstepping their role, there are congressmen in on the Republican side, such as Representative McCarthy, who is suggesting that Senator Schiff should be resigning.
Congressman
Schiff,
chair
of the Intel?
House chair of the Intelligence Committee,
And also that he should resign.
I didn't know that about that's McCarthy is from California, who's now the leader of the Republicans. Julie, let me put you on hold. Leave your last name. I'm curious to know who you are. And thanks for the memories there, Julie. Byron and JP, you're next. We don't have much time. You're on Boston Public Radio. Welcome.
Okay, I'm going to be quick.
Sure.
Three quick things. One, first of all, you two are great. Jim, the show suffers tremendously when you're not there.
Oh, please.
Marjorie, when you're not there, I don't even bother. I just go do something else.
Well, thank you for those kind words.
Go ahead. Next point.
So my 2 points. One, as we have to remember, collusion's not a crime. And that would have been the GOP mantra if this had gone the other way. And imagine the how party lines would have been permanently in the danger zone and separated if he had been found guilty of some collusion. You know, would have defended probably on the severity of it, but imagine this could have been much worse, I think, even though we all wanted wanted something to be found. I think it would have been much worse if something had, because I think he would have been protected. The second thing, and I'll let you go, is this report, I don't think it increases Trump's base. So I think Democrats need to take a deep breath, relax, and focus, because I don't think this won him any votes.
Well, I don't know, Byron. I'm very curious to see, and thanks for your call, and we won't let Marjorie take a day off now after what you've said. The interesting thing is the initial polling on this, and I'm not sure, Byron, you're right. You may be. Are there people in the middle who were sort of, some days I can handle him, some days I can't, who feel that if he was cleared of collusion, and at least so far, at least by the attorney general on obstruction, even if not by Mueller, are people going to give him a second look who otherwise might not have? I don't know.
But on the other hand, we normalize so much about the president. It is an odd thing.
That's a good point.
To have someone by the former head of the FBI said he may have committed obstruction of justice.
Well, is that
Clinton lost his job, and how Nixon didn't lose his job. Nixon lost his job, and Bill Clinton was impeached.
Was any less weird than the document saying this is not an exoneration, and then A few minutes later, the president says it's a complete and total exoneration. In any case, we're done for the day.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Tomorrow, we're going to be at the library. You can join us there if you're in the neighborhood, the Boston Public Library. Shirley Leung, Corby Kummer, and CNN's John King are going to be with us. Our crew, Chelsea Murs, Amanda McGowan, Tori Bedford, Arjun Singh. Our engineer is John the Claw Parker. What's on TV, Jim?
Two of the best legal analysts I know, a former federal judge, now at Harvard Law School, former Judge Nancy Gertner, and Jennifer Braceros are going to debate the pros and cons and, oh, the ins and outs of what we know so far. Zeke Emanuel with us the other day, one of the architects of the Affordable Care Act, has strong feelings on Medicare for All, or in his case, Medicare for America, as he calls it. He's the guy who wrote the piece in The Atlantic. We talked to him last week about wanting to die at 75. We talked more about that. And then I'm going to talk about the frightening, frightening assault on the right to counsel for poor people in criminal cases by the often silent Clarence Thomas. It is a real scary extremist proposition.
I'm Marjorie Egan.
I'm Jim Browdy.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks for all your great calls and emails today. Have a great afternoon and hope you tune in again tomorrow.